The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start with the headline on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal, Special Feature, Healthcare Heroes. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the article that will focus on the Lifetime Achievement Award. And this article is written by Jennifer Henderson with the headline, Finding Resources for Those in Need. For Dr. Gary Greenberg, serving patients who lack resources for potentially life-changing and life-saving healthcare is at the core of what he does on a daily basis. He began his work at Urban Ministries Open Door Clinic back in 2005 as a volunteer, and just 2 years later took on the role of medical director. From Urban Ministries Open Door Clinic's home on Capitol Boulevard, Greenberg transitioned into a new role as medical consultant last year. He remains committed to ensuring access to quality health care for community members in need. Our agency works almost entirely through the efforts of volunteers, Greenberg says. We do fundraising to make sure the program is in place and that we can support the efforts of talented and generous volunteers of almost every discipline. The clinic operates with doctors, nurses, interpreters, pharmacists, pharmacy and lab technicians, almost every category of health professional you can imagine. While most volunteers offer their time and services once or twice per month at the Open Door Clinic, there are others who come several times per week or even every day. Greenberg now sees himself as more of a coach when he's not providing medical services. His new role as medical consultant is an opportunity, he says, to serve as someone who hones and focuses the best resources available for our volunteers so that they can provide the best possible outcomes for patients. And that's of critical importance to the patients served at the Open Door Clinic. We define our patient population as low-income residents of Wake County without access to other resources for care, he says. That population includes those who cannot afford insurance, do not qualify for Medicaid or Medicare, and are not children who are eligible for other resources. The goal, Greenberg says, is an integrated program of comprehensive services that really covers the gamut of everything that outpatient medicine needs to represent, including things such as continuity, prevention, management of chronic disease. Community partners, he notes, provide resources lacking from other charities in order to give us the opportunity to deliver the care that we can be best proud. Looking forward, Greenberg has his sights set on several areas of particular importance. We have over the years introduced opportunities to do better care for nutritional issues, to do better instruction on lifestyle issues, and we have full-fledged mental health resources with a counselor available to help people at least face and plan how best to cope with the challenges that are encircling them on a continuing basis, he says. Looking to the future, Greenberg adds, I'd like to see the political winds shift and that we could begin to recognize that health care is a human right. What motivates you in your everyday work? Achieving quality outcomes for our patients, despite the barriers posed by their social challenges, is wonderfully gratifying. I'm proud to work among a group of volunteers from so many disciplines and life situations to achieve a comprehensive program with amazing results. What are your chief responsibilities? All of our staff positions serve to teach and coordinate work by volunteers in performing professional tasks. As medical director, I've worked to provide a structure where these volunteers can find that we provide all the necessary information so they can confidently deliver their best medical care. What do you enjoy most about what you do? I get great pleasure in extending and expanding the clinical impact of our volunteering professionals coming to primary care fresh from training or, more diversely, from administrative careers, from specialty care, or from retirement or family leave. What do you consider to be some of your major accomplishments? Recruiting and retaining many of our volunteers, plus supporting the sharp and fine-tuned intuition of our devoted but trained on-site support staff. Also developing and energetically supporting our high-energy and conscientious immunization program. How does your work impact patients and others in the healthcare community? Our patients are among the most disadvantaged in the community. By centering their care at a reliable and energetic primary care program, we found opportunity to gather amazing resources for their needs. If you could change one thing about healthcare, what would it be? stepwise lowering of Medicare's age at enrollment would enable phased introduction of a fully capable system of medical access for all. Creating a true system of care for all is easily within the cost now spent on our disjointed and cruelly neglectful healthcare marketplace. We can afford to recognize healthcare as a right, and doing so would actually be in nearly everyone's broader self-interest. Why did you choose healthcare for a career? Medical care seemed to provide a sure opportunity to use science in a manner useful to others. What do you like most about living in the Triangle? I'm proud of the diversity of our population and the energy of our institutions seeking improved lives for the community. And what do you do to relax and have fun? Erica and I have shared a home with three joyous dogs. We provide them with food and nature walks, and they provide us with endless entertainment. My two boys are a huge source of pride for their career success and their wonderful values and terrific wives and kids. And there's also a box with a little more information about Gary Greenberg, doctor, Open Door Clinic, Urban Ministries of Wake County, age 64, family members, partner Erica, two sons, education, MD, Northwestern University, residency, United Hospitals of Cleveland, fellowship, Duke University. And now we turn to biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings. The first headline, "Hey Amazon, would you deliver HQ2 somewhere else?" The leader of the Greater Raleigh Merchants Association took to Twitter March 6th with a strong message for Amazon. No thanks. The Triangle remains one of 20 markets under consideration for the company's second headquarters, but Jennifer Martin, executive director of GRMA, says many of the owners of the 725 businesses in her organization have concerns. From what we've heard, it's more against than for, she says. Martin says she has an issue with the whopping incentives North Carolina would have to provide to lure Amazon. I'm concerned we're not investing in the businesses we already have here, she says. Martin adds, if we are giving all these incentives, that's money people here have worked hard to make. And she worries about Raleigh losing the quaint feel the city retains even as it undergoes explosive growth. If Amazon comes, Martin asks, what will it do to our culture here? McConnell Golf may make a move to a prominent club in Charlotte. No one is talking about this, but at least two Charlotte sources tell Biz that Raleigh's McConnell Golf is looking to buy another country club in Charlotte. And the growing private golf course owner and developer may have set its eye on Ballantyne Country Club, a posh club in South Charlotte. When asked about the potential buy, owner John McConnell jokingly says, "Tell them I have no money left." If McConnell were to buy Ballantyne CC, it will be the first Reese Jones designed golf course under the McConnell Golf moniker. Biz hears Ballantyne Country Club has as many as 700 members with full membership, initiation fee of as much as $25,000. The club offers several layers of membership that includes the use of the swimming pool, tennis courts, and other facilities. All McConnell Golf members can play any of the club's 11 properties, 13 golf courses, including Providence Country Club in Charlotte, and its flagship Donald Ross-designed Raleigh Country Club. Oscar ratings drop in the Triangle, too. If you didn't stay up late March 4 to see the Oscars, you weren't alone. Hollywood's splashy awards show saw a big dip in ratings across the country, and that held true in the Triangle as well. Nationally, the Oscars broadcast on ABC drew a rating of 18.9, which translated into 26.5 million viewers and a roughly 20% drop from the previous year. 4 years ago, the awards show garnered 46 million viewers. That decline was seen in the Triangle as well. ABC 11 says 152,000 homes in the market were tuned into the Oscars this year for a rating of 13.4, compared to 202,000 homes and a rating of 17.5 last year. Reasons for the national drop ranged from the lack of blockbuster films in 2017 to the politicization of the event and a show that dragged on late. Also contributing is the shifting patterns of consumer behavior, with ABC 11 executives pointing out that the Nielsen numbers don't include people who streamed the event. Sorry Devils, Chapel Hill is America's best town for college hoops. The UNC Chapel Hill and Duke University basketball teams may have split games this season, but there is a clear winner when it comes to best college basketball town of the year, according to a new online analysis. Finance website WalletHub ranked Chapel Hill the best city for college basketball fans in the country based on a number of metrics, from team performance to the longevity of coaches to the price of season tickets. Durham came in fourth, behind Los Angeles and Lawrence, Kansas, home of the University of Kansas. Among the factors tipping the scales in Chapel Hill's favor were the number of NCAA titles, 6 compared to Duke's 5, and stadium size. The Dean Smith Center seats 21,750, while Cameron Indoor Stadium holds 9,314. Rounding out the bottom of the list were Clinton, South Carolina, Daytona Beach, Florida, and dead last was New Britain, Connecticut, home to the Central Connecticut State University Blue Devils. Former SAS executive lands a new gig. A former top executive at SAS Institute has landed on his feet in Canada. Carl Farrell, who until last year oversaw nearly 90% of global revenue at SAS, was recently named president of Toronto-based real estate-targeted technology firm Altus Group Limited. There, he oversees the company's analytics and cost consulting businesses. Given his vast experience at SAS and the point of inflection which we find Altus Analytics, we enter a new phase of global growth with an emphasis on data monetization, CEO Bob Courteau said of Farrell on a recent earnings call. I couldn't think of a better person to lead the charge and to take these business segments to new heights. Farrell had been a member of Altus's board of directors since 2014. At SAS, Farrell served as executive vice president and chief revenue officer, leading teams across more than 60 countries. No reason for his departure was ever disclosed. After he left the company, SAS CEO Jim Goodnight appointed Nick Lissy to the role of executive vice president of global sales. Hey, Brooklyn, leave our barbecue alone. Well, it's about time Phil Berger, Tim Moore, and Roy Cooper agreed on something. The Atlantic Coast Conference tournament is in Brooklyn, New York this week, and Berger, the leader of the North Carolina Senate, was irked to read that Brooklyn Barbecue was taking over the world. The website Munchies published March 4 that Brooklyn Barbecue was reaching the corners of the earth. That brought a forceful response from Berger, a New York native who landed in North Carolina when he went to law school at Wake Forest University. Everyone makes mistakes, and it's time for the writers at Munchies to admit theirs, he snorted. Brooklyn Barbecue, whatever that is, won't be taking over North Carolina anytime soon. This is a fact on which we can all agree, and I call on Governor Cooper and Speaker Moore to join me in mounting a bipartisan defense of our state's finest food. But Berger didn't address the real question of which North Carolina barbecue is better, Eastern or Western. It's Eastern, of course. And now we turn to On Technology and Startups, written by Lauren Onisorge. The first headline, Lord Corporation lands blockbuster contract. Carrier manufacturer Lord Corporation just scored a blockbuster deal with jetliner giant Boeing, a contract that has it developing a cockpit control device for the Boeing 737 MAX. The modules could start production in 2020 and someday assist commercial jet pilots throughout the globe. Lord's been in business since 1924, CEO Ed Auslander says. This year will approach becoming a billion-dollar company, and this contract is by far the biggest contract in our history. A third of Lord's business is in aerospace, with the remaining two-thirds in automotive and industrial, and Lord has worked with Boeing in some capacity for decades. This deal, however, ties it to Boeing's fast-selling airplane, the Boeing 737. The cockpit control device it's planning to deliver connects to a pilot's computer system to help the pilot monitor the engine power. They won't notice anything different, he says. How it connects to the pilot is the same as it's always been, but through a big collaboration with Boeing, we've been able to come up with an innovative solution that streamlines the design and makes it much simpler for Boeing to install in the aircraft, enabling them to save about 8 man-hours in the assembly process. It's a big win, one that's already resulted in new engineering hires in France, where some of the assembly is taking place, but it also has the potential to bolster Lord's Cary campus, where about 350 people work. In addition to the company's administrative headquarters, Kerry hosts a major research and development outfit, which will support the contract. CEO Poole stays mum on TCAP's strategic review process. Triangle Capital Corporation CEO Ashton Poole still isn't talking publicly about a strategic review process that could result in the sale of the Raleigh Investment Company. On an earnings call March 1, Poole said that despite the uncertainty, TCAP has extremely good relationships in the financial sponsor community. Those relationships continue and our dialogue and our flow continue, he said. And he insists that while that strategic process has taken management time, the company continues to be very disciplined and focused on our outreach and our origination efforts. TCAP, following a bad quarter last year, announced November 1 that it was undergoing a full strategic review process to right the ship, but executives have declined to give details. Undercover Colors drops nail polish. Armed with a new headquarters and a new CEO, Raleigh's Undercover Colors is evolving away from the nail polish to detect date rape drugs that set its reputation. With any new product, any research and development, there is a natural evolution, new CEO Barbara Cook says. We are very excited about the product we have evolved to. Cook declines to talk specifically about what exactly the company is targeting to release this fall, other than to say it will be gender neutral. Social media accounts of its backers offer up some hints. However, newly elected board of directors chair Marjorie Kaufman said on a Google Plus post that the company is planning to make bracelets with medallions that can change color when they touch a date rape drug, something Cook declines to confirm. But regardless of what form the product takes, Cook says the mission won't change when the firm moves from Centennial Campus to an undisclosed location in Research Triangle Park this year. We want to make the world a better place, she says. Cook, a fashion executive with roles at Beyonce, Gap, and Wet Seal on her resume, joined the firm late last year after the departure of CEO Tyler Confrey Maloney and Chief Operating Officer Stephen Gray, respectively. Both men co-founded the startup at NC State University. Cook says she can't discuss details as they left before her CEO tenure. I can tell you we are fabulously grateful for all the work that Tyler and Steve have done, she says. Everything they've done has enabled us to take the business from where it was to where we're going. IBM settles lawsuit over chief diversity officer. IBM, Research Triangle Park's largest employer, has settled a lawsuit against its former New York-based chief diversity officer who had accepted an executive position at one of its top competitors, Microsoft. IBM had filed suit against Lindsay Ray McIntyre, who received her undergraduate degree from UNC Chapel Hill and got her MBA at Duke University, accusing her of violating a non-compete agreement. A joint stipulation to dismiss with prejudice, which means the case won't be brought back to court, was signed by attorneys for both parties March 5. In its February 12 lawsuit, IBM alleged McIntyre's job with Big Blue had given her access to competitive information, particularly some closely guarded strategic plans and recruitment initiatives. Microsoft said it had no interest in any of IBM's confidential information. After the settlement, a Microsoft representative said the company was pleased this matter is resolved. McIntyre will start in July. Her attorneys did not respond for comment. An IBM spokesman said, "We're pleased the court granted IBM's motion for a temporary restraining order protecting IBM's confidential information and diversity strategies." And finally, in a section called He Said It, the quote, "Over the next 4 years, we intend to quadruple the size of Wolfspeed, and this will definitely be part of that opportunity." And that is Greg Lowe, Cree CEO, talking to investors after the company closed on the $426 million buy of Infineon Technology radio frequency assets. The move comes more than a year after Infineon tried to buy Cree's power and RF Wolfspeed business, a deal that failed over securities concerns. And now we turn to the On Life Sciences page, written by Jennifer Henderson. UNC Healthcare still plans partnerships. Following the March 2 news that UNC Healthcare and Atrium Health had ended discussions to combine, Dr. William Roper, CEO of UNC Healthcare, says he remains optimistic on future partnership opportunities. The deal drew opposition. Dr. Patrick Conway, the new president and CEO of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, said the state's largest insurer wouldn't support the combination, pointing to external data that showed similar combinations nationally have led to increases in costs. State Treasurer Dale Folwell said he asked UNC Healthcare to provide the state health plan with a $1 billion performance bond to guarantee any merger wouldn't increase costs for the plan and taxpayers. And North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein requested more information on the impact to patients. But Roper says public concerns about the deal were absolutely not the reason the merger ended, and he believes there may be more opportunities for partnerships ahead. We have an opportunity to reinvent healthcare, Roper says, pointing to better outcomes and lower costs. We think we will be able to do that more rapidly and with greater success if we learn from others and do things together. He adds, some people are troubled by folks partnering. I'm not at all. Roper says he had a very collegial conversation with Atrium CEO Gene Woods on the morning of the announcement. UNC and Atrium would not merge. Roper won't say why the merger failed, but says he and Woods could not reach a mutually satisfactory set of terms that will be comfortable for our two organizations. But future partnerships are possible, Roper says. UNC Healthcare remains opportunistic when it comes to partnering with Atrium Health and others in a variety of areas. This isn't the ending we thought it would come to some months ago, but there are a lot of opportunities out there, he says. Dova plans hiring Binge ahead of commercialization. With potential U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval in sight, the headcount at Durham-based Dova Pharmaceuticals is expected to more than double by the end of May, according to President and CEO Alex Saper. The company recently announced a secondary offering of its common stock following a roughly $80 million initial public offering last summer. It currently employs about 50 people and expects to employ 65 by April, and more than 100 by the end of May, he says. About half of those 100 employees will be based in the Durham headquarters, currently at 35 employees, with the other half field-based sales representatives and medical liaisons. The FDA is expected to make a decision on approval of Dova's drug Avatrombopag for the treatment of low platelet count in patients with chronic liver disease, CLD, by May 21. According to Dova, about 70,000 patients with CLD suffer from severe low platelet count in the U.S. Avatrombopag will be an alternative to more invasive platelet transfusions that present the possibility of infection, among other risks. Platelet count needs to be increased in these patients ahead of such medical procedures as liver biopsies and colonoscopies. Raleigh Pharma scores NIH funding, Rutgers partnership. With a $225,000 grant from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, part of the National Institutes of Health, a Raleigh firm is working with a New Jersey medical school on the development of tuberculosis treatments. The latest partnership between Collaborations Pharmaceuticals and Rutgers New Jersey Medical School will see them work on developing a series of compounds targeting the infectious disease that, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, impacted upward of 10 million people globally in 2016. Collaboration CEO Sean Eakin says it's a cost-effective way of addressing diseases other entities may not be considering. Aside from academia, the company also collaborates with foundations and other companies to develop clinical candidates in the rare disease space. Collaboration's latest work with Rutgers is aimed at having a treatment ready for clinical trials, according to Dr. Joel Frundlich, an associate professor at Rutgers NJMS. G1 gets good news on its chemo drug. Research Triangle Park-based G1 Therapeutics has received good news from a Phase 2A trial of trilaciclib, its drug for patients undergoing chemotherapy for small cell lung cancer. The data from this trial showed clear evidence that trilaciclib preserved bone marrow and immune system function from the damaging effects of chemotherapy, Chief Medical Officer Dr. Raj Malik said. The company, helmed by CEO Dr. Mark Valleca, expects preliminary data from two other clinical trials of trilaciclib in lung and breast cancer in the fourth quarter. Eric Schmidt, a managing director at Cowan & Company, said last year that G1's potential breakthroughs for 2018 would be with trilaciclib and G1-T38, another key G1 drug. Both are very high-interest programs for us, Schmidt said. For clinical-stage biopharmaceutical companies such as G1, trial results are primary drivers of stock price. The company raised more than $108 million in its initial public offering last year. A research report from Cowan & Company issued around the time of the IPO stated that it projected product launches from trilaciclib and G1-T38 in 2021, and that the products combined will yield revenues of $1 billion plus in 2025. And finally, RTP firm picks Virginia for 70-job expansion. Panaceutics, a Research Triangle Park-based personalized medicine company, will add 70 jobs in Virginia, with hiring slated to begin late this year. The company will invest $5.8 million in a facility for research and development as well as manufacturing, according to the Virginia Governor's Office. The move is aided by more than $500,000 in prior investments from the Launch Place, which assists development in the Dan River region. Stanton Noel, co-founder and chief executive officer of parent company Panacea Biomatics, says the expansion was motivated by a need to grow the manufacturing capability of the nutritional side of its business. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Ben Graham. NCSU picks developer for Centennial Campus. The new multi-phase development at NC State University Centennial Campus could begin to take shape soon, now that a developer has been pegged to oversee the build-out of the 32-acre site. The university picked Wexford Science and Technology, the Maryland-based company behind the floor-to-ceiling renovation of the Chesterfield Building in downtown Durham. That space is now home to tech companies and office and lab space leased by Duke University. Wexford also is responsible for developing 1.1 million square feet in the Wake Forest Innovation Quarter in Winston-Salem. The firm specializes in partnering with universities to develop office and lab space that can be shared with businesses. Wexford Senior Director of Development, Justin Parker, describes his firm's work as creating dynamic environments that foster collaboration, innovation, and collisions with the private sector. NC State officials say that track record, along with the company's recent history in North Carolina, tipped the scales in its favor. Wexford conveyed a deep understanding of developing and maintaining entrepreneurial hubs built on a foundation of research, discovery, and entrepreneurial activity, says Scott Douglas, NC State's Vice Chancellor of Finance and Administration. While Wexford and the university still need to hash out specific development plans, the next phases will be mixed use and will likely include a mix of office and lab space for both startups and established companies, Parker says. Centennial Campus was founded 30 years ago. In a tight market, warehouse near RTP fetches $16.8 million. With the Triangle's industrial space market humming along, Charlotte's Trinity Capital Advisors has sold its first warehouse investment in the area. Along with partner Silver Cap Partners, the firm recently closed on a $16.8 million deal to sell a 272,282-square-foot warehouse that once was home to IBM. The buyer is Dalphin America Corporation, a Dallas real estate investment firm that focuses on industrial properties. The warehouse sits on 15 acres within the Research Tri-Center, a 130-acre industrial park with more than 2.4 million square feet of multi-use space. The building was originally constructed for IBM in 1989. Trinity Capital Advisors and Silver Cap Partners teamed up to buy the facility for $10.2 million in 2016, which was about half occupied at the time by its lone tenant, Amcor Ridged Plastics USA. The new owners revamped the warehouse, adding loading docks and new office space. It made it a much more functional building, Trinity Capital Advisors partner Jeff Sheehan says. Today, the warehouse is completely leased. The balance of the building after Amcor is occupied by Hatchberry Laboratories, a Los Angeles-based company that produces cosmetic products. The acquisition and renovation was part of a larger effort by Trinity Capital Advisors to acquire underappreciated industrial and warehouse buildings in prime regional locations. Raleigh Kitchen and Bath Company makes acquisition. A Raleigh-based countertop company has made a series of acquisitions since December in an attempt to become a one-stop shop for builders. Majestic Kitchen and Bath Creations purchased Builders Glass and Hardware of Wilmington. The acquisition broadens the company's product offerings and expands its customer base along the coast from Jacksonville down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, President and CEO Scott Beyer says. It provides more depth in the marketplace, he says. We have more talent and people in the Wilmington area. The acquisition also gives Majestic the capability to fabricate glass in Wilmington and to deliver closet shelving and door hardware for home builders. The deal is designed to create a packaged set of offerings for home builders in the Triangle home market and beyond. Raleigh housing market may be undervalued. Home prices are rising in Raleigh, but not nearly as much as other tech hubs around the country. The five-year appreciation rate in prices across the metro area is 27%, according to a new report from data analytics company CoreLogic. That's above the state average of 25%, but lukewarm when weighed against top tech cities. In Austin, Texas, the five-year appreciation in home prices has reached 42%. For Denver, prices have skyrocketed 58%. The flip side is that many markets across the country, including Austin and Denver, are deemed by CoreLogic to be overvalued, a rating that considers whether a housing market has home prices that are at least 10% higher than long-term sustainable levels. Undervalued markets are those in which home prices are at least 10% below sustainable levels. According to the report, Raleigh is right in the middle, meaning the home market is right at value. And the last article on this page, Lake Crabtree building sells for $18.4 million. A Carey building that is a little more than a stone's throw from Lake Crabtree has a new owner. A joint venture comprised of Childress Klein Properties and WHI Real Estate Partners sold the three-story office building at 6501 Weston Parkway for $18.4 million to Boston investment firm Albany Road Real Estate Partners. The transaction comes after renovations undertaken by the partners in 2016. The partners previously bought the building in 2014 for $12.5 million, shortly after it was vacated by software company Jaeger, formerly SideQuest. Today, the building is 90% occupied. Anchor tenants include Charter Communications, Aerotech, and Zift Solutions. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Retail and Restaurants, written by Dathan Kazuk. Potential tariffs concern North Carolina beer industry. With the looming proposal to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum by the Trump administration, there is a possibility the move could hurt the growing beer industry in North Carolina. Trump has proposed a 10% tariff on aluminum, which is widely used to make beer cans. According to the Beer Institute, a 10% tariff could create a $347.7 million tax on America's beverage industry, leading to the possible loss of 20,291 jobs. Andy Morrison, director of craft brands at Harris Beverages in Durham, says that most breweries would be able to survive. I would guess that the increase per can of beer would be small enough that most breweries might find it easier to absorb that cost while raising the price on kegs to recover their money, he says. That would more than likely increase the cost of a pint of beer at a local watering hole or bottle shops. But Morrison says that all depends on where and how the breweries sell their beer. The larger the brewery and the more packaged beer they sell in grocery stores, the harder it will be to ignore the increased cost for the cans, he says. While the smaller breweries might raise the prices of kegs, some of the larger breweries might look to raise the cost of a six-pack, according to those in the industry. Regardless, the issue has raised concerns in an industry that has rapidly grown in North Carolina. Imported aluminum used to make beer cans is not a threat to national security. The largest importer of aluminum is the United States, to the largest importer of aluminum to the United States is Canada, the Beer Institute said in a statement. New app will help find jobs for hospitality industry. A new triangle-manufactured application is about to hit the market with the goal of giving talent in the food service industry an opportunity to work at various venues. The app, called HireScene, that's spelled S-C-E-N-E, allows people to tap into the gig economy where the labor force gravitates to short-term contracts. The move is being sparked by the growing popularity of mobile applications. HireScene will provide a home for contractors to share opportunities that fit specific criteria. We're seeing growing numbers of professionals and college students gravitating toward contingent employment because of the inherent flexibility it provides, says Mike Youngblood, president and CEO of HireScene. The app will allow users with skills in the hospitality industry to see options on when and where they want to work. With HireScene app users define and dictate their own schedules and income with the push of a button, says Mary Gage, director of the on-demand division of HireScene. HireScene is one of the latest apps coming from the Technology Incubator, which is located in Raleigh at NC State University's Centennial Campus. Raleigh featured in second season of culinary series. The new season of INSP's culinary travel series, State Plate, will have an episode featuring some of the most delectable dishes North Carolina has to offer. The series is hosted by Taylor Hicks, a restaurateur and 2006 American Idol winner, and will air March 19 at 7:30 p.m. In the series, Hicks goes across the U.S. to find plates that represent each state's most historic, famous, and tastiest foods. During his visit to the Tar Heel State, Hicks stopped by the Pit Authentic Barbecue in downtown Raleigh. New place to check out golf clubs coming to Triangle. Club Champion, an Illinois-based golf club retailer, is coming to the Triangle. The new golf retail store will be located at 419 Crossroads Boulevard in Cary and will open in April. The store is known for fitting, selling, and building custom golf clubs constructed from club heads and shafts from brands such as Callaway, TaylorMade, Ping, Titleist, and Fujikura. The Cary location will feature nearly 3,000 square feet of space and include two indoor hitting bays with launch monitors to analyze performance. We are excited to bring the finest club fitting and building to Raleigh, said Joe Lee, president and CEO of Club Champion. This will be Club Champion's second location in the state. They have a location in Charlotte. And now we turn to A Better World, written by Todd Cohen, who also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. The headline on his column, Tax Changes Raise Concerns for Nonprofit. In 1986, as part of an overhaul of federal tax law, Congress created a low-income tax credit designed to stimulate financing and development of affordable housing. A key goal was to shift responsibility for affordable housing to the private sector from the federal government, which was not keeping pace with growing need among low-income Americans for low-cost housing, says Dana Boole, president and CEO of Raleigh-based Community Affordable Housing Equity Corporation, or CAHEC. Since taking effect, the tax credit program has helped produce 3.2 million units of affordable housing in the U.S., including more than 24,900 units developed with financing assembled by CAHEC. The nonprofit operates with a staff of 40 people and an annual budget of $10 million, generated entirely from fees from investors. It syndicates equity from banks and corporate investors to finance affordable housing in 10 states in the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic region in exchange for tax credits to offset federal taxable income. It also uses tax credits to syndicate equity for projects to stimulate economic development in distressed communities, preserve historic properties, and develop sustainable energy. Affordable housing is the main focus of CAHEC, which has raised a total of $2.1 billion since it was created, nearly all of it for housing. The U.S. Department of the Treasury allocates tax credits each year to the states at a rate of $2.35 per resident. In 2017, North Carolina received $23.5 million in tax credits. The North Carolina Housing Finance Agency, in turn, distributes the credits each year to developers of roughly 30 projects based on a competitive process. But now, Boole says the production of affordable housing is projected to decline by 15% as a result of a tax bill approved by Congress in December that lowered the corporate tax rate to 21% from 35%. The lower rate will reduce the return and the incentive to invest for equity investors already squeezed by escalating construction costs from rising expenses for labor, land, and materials, and by a sharp drop in development grants from local, state, and federal government, Boole says. That lower tax rate will make it even more challenging to develop affordable housing to try to help address the needs of the 11 million U.S. households that pay more than half their monthly income on rent, Boole says. So CAHEC, along with other equity syndicators throughout the U.S., has been working to raise awareness among members of Congress about the need for affordable housing. The House and Senate both are considering bills to revise the tax credit, including a proposal to increase the availability of the credit by 50% over 5 years. CAHEC also is working with its partners, investors, and developers to value engineer its projects, Boole says. How do you control construction costs from rising? Building projects more efficiently, trying to streamline projects, not cutting corners, he says. How can we tackle this in a better, smarter way with the credits we have to build safe and affordable housing? And in nonprofit news, big day for angel investors. Meredith College raised a whopping $392,811 February 27 when it held its third annual Giving Day for the school. The school said a total of 1,825 donors gave over a 24-hour period and surpassed the goal of $350,000. The goal was for the funds to honor a strong woman with a gift, with the donor designating where the dollars would go. Gala raises funds for kids. A crowd of 600 people celebrated the Methodist Home for Children in Raleigh on January 27 with the annual Winter's Tale at the Raleigh Convention Center. Country music star Jimmy Wayne, who grew up neglected before an elderly North Carolina couple took him in, shared his story and helped the event raise $330,000. Helping out young artists, ArtSpace is offering need-based scholarships to 50 students who want to enroll in their popular summer arts program. Nominations, generally from local art teachers, are being accepted through April 25. And now we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column that focuses on David Kelly. David Kelly's title is Division President at Toll Brothers the Carolinas, age 38, family, wife Joyce, children David, 6, Leah, 4, and Danny, 2, education, BS, Business Administration and MBA, Penn State University, first job, dishwasher at a high-end restaurant. This article is written by Ben Graham. The headline, Getting Creative in a Crowded Home Building Market. David Kelly has been with Toll Brothers, a publicly traded Pennsylvania-based home builder, in markets around the country since 2004, but he was still caught off guard when he relocated to Raleigh in 2012. The level of competition among home builders in the Triangle was fierce, he says. Still, land was cheap and available at that time, but the market has only tightened since then as home building has heated up. Today, demand is high for land and new homes, and well-located parcels are scarce. Coupled with the ongoing labor shortage, prices continue to rise. As the Carolinas Division President at Toll Brothers, Kelly oversees an operation in the Triangle that builds a fairly large number of homes, 186 in the region in 2017, while keeping a high price point. And year-over-year growth has been strong, recently hitting 85% for the company's Raleigh office. Here, Kelly offers his insights on how to get creative and maintain growth in a hot market. How did you start in the home building industry? I was drawn to anything construction-related since I was very young. While attending Penn State University, I had the opportunity to work for a custom home builder where I learned many facets of the business. Since then, I knew I wanted to work in home building as my career. When did you come here? I relocated from Pennsylvania to Raleigh in 2012 with Toll Brothers. At that time, the market was strong and our sales were good. I recall how taken aback I was with the increased amount of competition that existed in the area compared to my other market experience. Most notably, land was much less expensive locally back in 2012. What has changed since then? The local competition has increased even more, and prime land has become scarce. This has pushed some to more peripheral locations where land can be found at a more reasonable cost. Competition for trades has also increased, and it has become more of a challenge to maintain cycle times and costs. What achievement are you most proud of during your time at Toll Brothers? Recently, our Raleigh team achieved 85% year-over-year growth for closings. To achieve that level of growth in a short period while simultaneously delivering top-quality homes and maintaining high levels of customer satisfaction says a lot about our team. I am very proud of our Raleigh division and our strong team. What single deal are you most proud of? We recently closed on our first community in Holly Springs. I'm very excited for Toll Brothers to enter this market and partner with the town of Holly Springs. The community is Addison Pond at 12 Oaks, set to open for sale in 2018, and boasts 62 home sites from our signature collection of designs in a coveted location. Has Toll Brothers adjusted its strategy in the face of heated competition for land? We have expanded the areas in which we look for land to more of the peripheral areas such as Holly Springs, Fuquay Varina, and Garner. Growth is moving toward these areas to the south and east as transportation efficiency improves, including the future southern extension of I-540. We are also targeting infill opportunities in Raleigh and Durham. In addition to geographic diversification, we have greatly expanded our product offering and will oftentimes create product to meet the market or specific opportunity. What is the most significant change coming in the luxury home market? Locally, the air is getting slightly thinner for homes at the higher price points. I anticipate a reduced supply of higher-priced luxury homes and the introduction of more moderately priced homes that still deliver the luxury experience. While confidence is high, the increasing interest rates are gaining buyer attention. What is the biggest obstacle your company faces in the Triangle? Maintaining a solid mix of available lots and prime locations does pose a challenge. However, we are adjusting and getting more creative in our land acquisition strategy to offset the current supply limitations. We're evaluating all areas of the Triangle, including those that have not traditionally been known as markets for luxury homes. We're also successfully partnering with other builders and developers, and we continue to look for additional collaborative opportunities with our peers. Is technology changing the way Toll Brothers builds homes? We have been slightly ahead of the curve with the larger technological components of our homes by utilizing panelized construction and roof trusses, which both provide many benefits to our homeowners. Smart home technology is gaining traction, and the buyer demand is targeting integration and simplicity. Autonomous vehicles are on our radar as we expect these advancements to have significant impacts on home design. What would you say to a young person interested in the home building business? Home building is still cool. It seems as though building homes has fallen out of favor with recent graduates to some extent. I would encourage today's youth to not rule it out of their career options. What's the next hot location for home builders? I see most home builders targeting opportunities along the I-540 Southern Extension. This project will open up the southern area and beyond for tremendous growth, as it has for the western side of Cary Apex and surrounding areas. What do you do to unwind? When away from work, I love to spend my downtime with my wife and our three children. We enjoy getting outdoors and taking advantage of the beautiful weather the area has to offer. Have you read any books recently that have impacted you? I recently read The Effective Executive, written by Peter Drucker. With time being such a precious resource, it helped me find ways to be more efficient, better manage my time daily, communicate more effectively, and focus on results. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline: A failed hospital deal that was for the best. Just a few days ago, when news broke that Charlotte-based Atrium Health was backing out of the deal to marry Charlotte to marry Chapel Hill's UNC Healthcare into a huge healthcare concern, there was one thing very clear. The marriage of the two systems was simply not blessed by many. In fact, there were too many people and groups not willing to forever hold their peace. To me, as I have mentioned before in my previous column, it came down to transparency or lack thereof. UNC Healthcare and Atrium, formerly Carolina's healthcare system, were simply not forthcoming with their future plans to protect the hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians it wanted to serve. As a result, they could not get the blessing from the North Carolina Attorney General's office or the North Carolina Treasurer's office that oversees the state health plan. True, had UNC and Atrium managed to hammer out an agreement, they would have shared that information with all relevant parties and answered all the concerns. But the deal never got to that point. UNC Atrium would have been huge, some 60 hospitals under its control, with 60,000 employees and thousands of physicians under its wing. That surely would have been a concern for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, the state's largest insurer. Why? Because the joint entity would have been the Walmart of healthcare services in the state. That means more influence, power, and leverage when negotiating reimbursement rates with BCBSNC. As expected, Blue Cross came out against the deal. Given UNC's mission, UNC's William Roper was dead on when he said right after the announcement of the breakup, "We wanted to make sure that we protected the things that are fundamental to our mission, our service to the state, and our relationship to the university." And that's all what every North Carolinian wants. They want a strong hospital system that is tied to a greater good. Of course, Atrium wanted majority control. Their mission is different. And when you put profits before purpose, things change. Some for good, but a lot for bad. Both hospital systems maintain that the joint healthcare entity would have been a public nonprofit corporation, but don't for a minute think nonprofit means without profit. It's an accounting term in healthcare, much of which has to do with taxes. Mergers create savings if done properly. But from the start, this looked like a deal where UNC Healthcare was going to lose and do most of the compromising. Atrium's Woods knew not many people would have had their peace had the deal gone through, and Roper was right to fight for control. This breakup was for the best. And now we move to a section called The List for the Listmaker Q&A, Picking the Brain of a Heart Doc, 5 Questions with Dr. James Zidar. Triangle Business Journal caught up with board-certified cardiologist Dr. James Zidar, who is part of the heart valve replacement team at Listmaker, North Carolina Heart and Vascular, to get his thoughts on the field of his practice. What trends are you seeing in the field of cardiology now? The evolution toward less invasive approaches to manage structural heart disease, more transcatheter aortic valve replacements, or TAVRs, and less open heart valve replacements. Also, the management of common disease in a uniform algorithmic manner decreases variability in costs. What is the most exciting piece of research in the field of cardiology that you think has the most promise? The progressive strides in the field of mitral valve disease, similar to the progress with aortic valve management, new and less invasive approaches are being attempted on an increasingly frequent basis each year. What is the most challenging aspect of providing quality care to your patients? The delicate balance between providing a quality interaction with my patients while attempting to see a growing volume of patients in a limited amount of time. That's more challenging with other complicating factors such as entering everything into the patient's electronic medical records. What is the most common problem you're seeing among your patients? Medicare-aged patients have limited access to primary care physicians, or PCPs. This issue is especially concerning for the elderly population who relocate to this region to be closer to children and are trying to find a new primary care physician. This limits their access to baseline medical care and often forces them to see specialty care providers for simple problems that could have been handled by a PCP. What are the best things a person can do to prevent cardiovascular problems? Establish an exercise routine. Maintain flexibility. Optimize weight based on body frame, diet. Manage blood pressure. No cholesterol totals. Don't smoke. And follow an appropriate heart-healthy diet. In a section called Looking Ahead, here's a look at a few trends to look for in 2018 as it pertains to the field of cardiology, according to the American College of Cardiology. Expect progress in the role of PCSK9 inhibitors, recognition of the impact of inflammation on cardiovascular disease, the percutaneous placement of aortic and mitral valves, a larger role for wearable and implantable devices and the data they collect, and atrial fibrillation, or AFib, heart failure, diabetes, and cardio-oncology will be among the most prominent disease areas. And by the numbers, $1.26 million. The amount raised by the 2018 Triangle Heart Ball, the money goes to support research, advocacy, and awareness of heart disease and stroke. And $2 million, the fundraising goal of the upcoming Triangle Heart Walk. According to its website, the event has already raised nearly $420,000 toward that goal. And finally, a section on how to help prevent becoming a statistic at all ages. Choose a healthy eating plan. Choose foods low in saturated fat, trans fat, and sodium. As part of a healthy diet, eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, fiber-rich whole grains, fish, preferably oily fish at least twice per week, nuts, legumes, and seeds, and try eating some meals without meat. Select lower-fat dairy products and poultry, skinless. Limit sugar-sweetened beverages and red meat. If you choose to eat meat, select the leanest cuts available. And we'll end with the ACBJ Business Survey Pulse. The question, do you agree with Dick's Sporting Goods' decision to stop selling assault-style weapons? The number of responses, 472. The yeses, 79%. The noes, 21%. And we're going to stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. This is Derek Frost reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138.